You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
I'm Tristan Taramino, and this is Sex Out Loud.
That's why I'm literally writing a whole book about my gender.
My mom and I were on BBC together talking about sex work and disability, which is something I never thought I would ever do.
Where do we learn about how to react to bodily fluid?
People have abortions more than we want to admit, and abortion is beyond healthcare. It's really body autonomy.
Someone talks about porn ruining sex. The question for me is, which porn?
I don't want anybody to fetishize my Jewishness who wouldn't stand next to me at a march.
I just wanted to show polyamory in a way that looks like polyamory.
If you're excited by sexual pleasure and sexual politics, you've come to the right place.
I've been this radical queer agnostic theologian for a long time.
They think that Muslims don't have sex.
There is a very specific history of racism and anti-blackness in this country.
I don't know who started this myth that after people are sexually assaulted, they never want to fornicate again.
We really don't think that change happens without knowing what we're for and not just what we're against.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, we do a lot of shows about ethical non-monogamy, about polyamory, swinging, solo polyamory, partner non-monogamy. We've had a lot of those discussions. And so you may have heard this word before, compersion. Compersion, before I tell you what compersion is, but compersion is a concept that some folks came up with that has to do with polyamory. And we've never devoted an entire show to it. But I love the idea of doing that, and I've found the perfect person to do it with. Dr. Marie Tuen is passionate about the intersection of love and freedom. She holds a PhD from the California Institute of Integral Studies, where her research focused on the experience of compersion in consensually non-monogamous relationships. She is also the founder of Love Insight, a mindful dating and relationship coaching practice where she supports growth-minded people of all backgrounds and relationship styles to foster soulful, intentional love. When she isn't coaching clients or working on academic projects, you'll probably find Marie roaming the trails of the San Francisco Bay Area, making new friends or enjoying old ones. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Marie.
Thank you so much for having me. This is exciting.
So I culled together kind of like a group of definitions about what compersion is to give people a sense if they don't know. If we go back to the sort of historical inception, the early 90s, there was an intentional love community in the San Francisco Bay Area called Carista. Mm-hmm. And this is attributed to their members. And they first coined the term as a feeling of taking joy in the joy that others you love share among themselves.
Mm-hmm.
The Urban Dictionary says it's a feeling of joy when a loved one invests in and takes pleasure from another romantic or sexual relationship. Elizabeth Sheff says it is, I've had her on the show before several times, the warm glow of happiness that comes when one's lover is happy with one of their other lovers. Okay, and now your definition. Compersion is our wholehearted participation in the happiness of others. It is the sympathetic joy we feel for somebody else when their positive experience does not involve or benefit us directly. Thus, compersion can be thought of as the opposite of jealousy and possessiveness. Okay, so these are all along the sort of same lines, right? I actually thought that the very beginning one was really interesting. The feeling of taking joy in the joy that others you love share among themselves. Because that's something like people, I think, can access. I mean, that makes me think of like being at someone's commitment ceremony where I'm taking joy in my two friends, like making this commitment and having this ritual, right? And it has nothing to do with me.
Right?
So, because I think sometimes people, when they read about compersion in polyamory books or they read about it online, they're like, oh my God, how is this How is this even possible? Why is compersion such a radical concept?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I mean, I love that you brought in all of those definitions to begin with. And it makes us think like, well, what is love? You know, like, do we need to love both people involved in order to feel compersion for that situation? Or what if we love one person who loves somebody else that we don't have a relationship with? Can we still feel compersion for them? I would say yes. So why is it a radical concept? Because of mononormativity. We live in a society that tells us that jealousy is the only response that is valid or healthy or normal to our lover or our partner being with somebody else. And we get this message in our minds from the moment we're born in general. So it sounds so counterintuitive to think that we could derive pleasure and positive emotions from something that is so culturally said to be something negative and painful and problematic. So for me, like, it's the outer reaches of love. That's a place where we don't normally go looking for love or good positive experience. I mean, in a way, it makes me think a little bit about kink and BDSM. Like, it can sound very radical because we don't normally think about going into a place where normally we would feel pain and looking for pleasure there, but there is a lot of pleasure to be found.
That is a great comparison. I love that. It's sort of like, especially for people who don't do BDSM, right? They think, oh my God, that's like on the edges of a place I would never go. When in fact, first of all, some of those people do kinky things. They just don't call them kink or BDSM. And BDSM is such a vast umbrella term for so many things. It's like, oh, it's a shopping mall. I mean, you'll probably will find something out there on the edge because it's your edge, right? It's like no one else's edge.
Right.
But we do live in a mononormative society where it's assumed that everyone should be monogamous and that monogamy is sort of the best choice, the only choice, the most functional and healthy choice, the adult choice, right? Mm-hmm. And we all have that programming. So even people who practice non-monogamy, we're working with, we came up with that wiring. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We all still have all those ideals swimming around in our brains because we've internalized them because that is what we, for most of us, that is what we saw modeled around us. That is what our peers and our community and our parents were doing. And so we don't necessarily have these kind of other frameworks. Right. And the other thing I always think about with compersion is that people who are new to non-monogamy are like, I don't know if I could ever get there. Like, what I think of as compersion is like the ultimate in compersion is my person falling in love with another person and me throwing them a party to celebrate.
Yes.
Where like I do all the labor and I do all the work for the party because it's so important to me. Right. And actually it has not nothing to do with me, right? Because my loved one is in love. But I'm not getting direct benefit from it. Like that other I like that idea. It doesn't involve or benefit us directly. That's in your definition. Mm-hmm. But certainly, I think people who've read about it and haven't practiced non-monogamy are often scared or intimidated by it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So my first thing is, do you think compersion is necessary for a fulfilling non-monogamous relationship?
That is such a good question. And I asked my research participants that question, and some said yes, and some said no, which is interesting. Like, I ask people I know, and there's a big variety of opinions about that. But in my opinion, I think we need to start with looking at compersion not as an on or off switch, like you either have it or you don't, but more as a spectrum. Because when you describe compersion in terms of, oh, you have to feel this amazing joy and you have to basically get high from your partner being with someone else and you have to desire to throw them a party for them and their partner, that is something that people in general might look at and say like, oh no, I can't imagine being in that place. And we don't realize that compersion can also just be an attitude of feeling supportive. Like, okay, I'm not thrilled. I'm not going to feel like I want to throw you a party right now, but I understand you want to be with this other person and I support you. And I am keeping an open heart to you while you're doing it. I'm not shutting down. I'm not sulking. I'm not, you know, giving you a hard time or throwing a tantrum. I'm actually supportive of this because I know it's making you happy. I know it's making your life better. And I want to love all of who you are, including your attractions and your relationships with other people. So that might be a milder expression of compersion, which in my language, I would call that to have a compersive attitude, more of an attitudinal compersion, rather than like the full on embodied experience of like, wow, I feel exactly what you feel. Please tell me all the details. I'm getting high on this. So there is a lot of flavors. That's one of the things I found in my research, like many flavors of compersion. So you don't have to hold yourself to this, you know, like super powerful, total full body experience of compersion as like, do I need this to be happy in my consensually non-monogamous relationship? Like, no, you don't need that to be happy. But I would think you need at least the attitude. You need to be at least supportive of your partners and their relationships. Because if you're not, then there's always going to be a lot of friction.
Okay, I love this idea of it as a spectrum because that means that there's a drop of compersion even at the beginning, right?
A drop.
So that's what it made me think. It's that there can be a so for everyone who says like I can never get there, it's like, well, you've already started because look, your partner is involved with someone else. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that you gave them that gift, the fact that you opened your mind, the fact that you didn't like run away screaming, you know, when that whole idea was proposed means like you're at the beginning of the compersion.
Yes.
And that feels like a more empowered place to speak from, right? Than I'll never, ever, ever get there.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, I talk to a lot of poly people who don't like the term compersion because they see it as this thing that they can't achieve, you know, this like polier than thou standard. And they don't like to feel like, oh, this is another thing that I have to beat myself with because I don't feel enough compersion. I'm not poly enough. But yeah, if we look at it as the spectrum of like, oh, I can have a compersive attitude and I can look at whatever is in the way of feeling more of it and think, okay, like, do I have any power over those obstacles? Then it can become more of a path and more of a inclusive concept rather than something that you're either like in or out.
Right, right. Okay, let's talk about attitude because one of the things that happens sometimes in polyamory and in like writing about polyamory, for example, is we read this advice, and I'm going to include my own book opening up in this. We read this advice and it assumes a kind of ideal world. I mean, I definitely think about the book More Than Two. And to me, I'm reading More Than Two and I'm saying philosophically and intellectually, I totally get this. But I also know that when I show up in relationships, I'm not always my best self. I want to be my best self, but I'm not. And I think first we have to acknowledge that and we have to be more real and honest about the fact that these mistakes and these stumbles happen to everyone. But so I'm thinking now about the person who wants to have a compersive attitude, but has this feeling in their body of I'm going to vomit. Or there's a pit in my stomach, or my heart is racing. I do not feel good. I want to be compersive, but I'm having these overwhelming feelings, even visceral ones.
Yeah.
What do we do about that?
Well, I think first of all, you have to accept that it's okay. It's okay to have conflicting experiences, and compersion can definitely coexist with jealousy and with all of these negative feelings. Like, you don't have to get rid.
Okay, so it's not, sorry to interrupt. This is such a good point. Compersion is not the absence of jealousy.
Correct.
Okay, keep going.
Yeah, that is so important to know, because if we think we have to wait until there's no jealousy at all to feel compersion, I mean, most of us are not going to get there. I mean, jealousy is part of the rainbow of emotions that will come up. And it's also important to normalize it, to not just say like, oh, as long as there's jealousy, I'm not poly enough, or I'm not good, or I'm not able to love correctly. Like, of course, we want to try to minimize it and see what causes it and see if some of those pain points can be loosened. But yeah, it's super important to know. Yeah, first of all, jealousy can coexist with compersion. Can you build compersion alongside the jealousy, alongside the jealous feelings? And then in terms of the mindset, there's so much we can do to try to extricate ourselves from that mononormative culture. One of those things is to be with other non-monogamous folks, have role models, read books, like feed our minds with counter narratives to everything we've been absorbing for our entire lives. Like, we've been absorbing so much mononormative information, and we have to kind of unlearn all that through connections with people and through literature and podcasts like this. So that's one of the things I tell my coaching clients all the time, is like, be careful with what information you're feeding your brain, and you have to validate this new identity. It's a little bit like LGBTQ populations, you know, like the process of coming out and embracing and validating a new identity. There is going to be those obstacles of internalized heteronormativity, and you have to kind of extricate yourself from that and validate your identity and be with people who understand you and love you like you are. It's the same thing with non-monogamy. Like, you have to put yourself in a social situation that validates that, because otherwise it's going to be really, really hard to adjust your mindset and to like, there's a lot of compersion has to do with pride, actually. That's an interesting thing that came up in my research too.
Say more.
Yeah, like, a lot of people describe that feeling of compersion as somewhat of a result of having overcome the fear that polyamory was going to break their couples up, or, you know, that was not going to work. Like, this sense of, oh, society has been telling me my whole life that I should just be jealous if my partner is with somebody else. And here's that situation. And, oh, actually, I'm able to feel love. I'm able to feel inclusion. I'm able to feel acceptance and joy. Like, I am accomplishing something big here. Like, not to say like, oh, this should be the goal for everyone, but this pride, this sense of we're walking to the beat of our own drum, it's really empowering, and it causes this joy, this inclusive joy. Like, so it's definitely an element of compersion.
I love that idea, pride. It's like pride that you've actually reprogrammed your brain, right?
Yeah.
Pride that you've been able to work through a bunch of stuff and gotten out the other side of that, which we all, isn't that why I've been in therapy for 25 years?
Yeah.
Okay.
You should feel proud.
Let's take a commercial break. We are going to hear from one of our great sponsors. And when we come back, more on compersion. Stay with us. Support for Sex Out Loud is provided by Manscaped. Hey, it's Pride season. Are you ready to show off your body loud and proud? Do you want to do it with or without a massive bush? Remember, it's always your choice. Well, if you're looking to make your pubes pride ready, Manscaped is the world leader in below-the-waist grooming. I have a Manscaped Lawnmower 4.0, and I absolutely love it. It's the only thing I use for my grooming, and I've gifted it to a lot of people in my life, too. Your beautiful body deserves the best new technology, performance, and craftsmanship. Prep for pride with the brand new Lawnmower 4.0 and the Ultra Smooth Package. And do it with a discount. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code Tristan at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free worldwide shipping when you use Tristan at checkout by going to manscaped.com. Manscaped offers precision engineered tools for your jewels. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Today we are talking about compersion in ethical non-monogamous relationships. And I'm here with Dr. Marie Tuen, who holds a PhD from the California Institute of Integral Studies. And her research there focused on the experience of compersion in consensually non-monogamous relationships. So she talked to a lot of people and thought and wrote a lot all about compersion. That's why it's so exciting to just do an entire show on it. Okay, so let's dive into what do you think gets in the way of people seeking compersion and experiencing it?
Okay. Yeah, that's a great question. What gets in the way of people seeking compersion? I would imagine oftentimes not knowing that it's possible. Because we don't have that word in the dictionary, it's not in our common parlance. You know, we use words as a way to create maps for emotions. The more words we have for emotions, the more we're likely to experience them. That's kind of how our brain works. So the fact that we don't have this word growing up, we don't think it's possible. Like oftentimes, when I tell people about the word or the concept of compersion for the first time, I can see something lighting up in their eyes. Like, oh, wait, that's possible? Like, that's actually something I could experience? Or maybe, oh, maybe I've experienced a little bit of that and I just didn't have a word. But like something lights up when we have the language for it.
Because don't you also think it's possible in non-romantic relationships? See, that's the other thing. I think compersion, people can experience compersion in all sorts of love relationships.
Right. Absolutely. And like, I also kind of like to break down my definition of compersion in two, like the first being like, okay, compersion for just life situations in general, like my brother is getting a good job or promotion or is getting married and I'm going to feel happy with him because there is not a sense of threat from that. There is not a sense of like, why wouldn't I feel happy? I'm not, jealousy is not coming in the way. And that's very easy for people to understand. And in the context of romantic relationships, again, because we've been taught that we shouldn't feel that or cannot feel that, then we think it's not possible. So it really is helpful to relate the word to situations that people can understand and relate to easily, like even the whole analogy of having children. Like if you have one kid and you love them completely and then you have another kid, you don't love the other kid less and you feel happy for them if they're happy. So that's the kind of love that people can relate to so easily. And now what gets in the way of people experiencing it, there's individual factors, there's relational factors, and there's social factors. So at the individual level, the two main ones are first, obstacles to having an ideology that is supportive of compersion or supportive of non-monogamy. So internalized mononormativity is the biggest one. And oftentimes people who have been dragged into non-monogamy by their more poly partner have more of that problem. Like they're like, okay, I'm going to do this to be with you, but it's under duress, like poly under duress. That's usually an obstacle to feeling compersion. And then another one at the individual level is lack of self-confidence, lack of self-esteem, or lack of self-care even. Like the confidence is kind of intuitive. Like if you don't feel like you can go out and have other partners and your whole sense of security in the world depends on this person, it's going to be hard to let go of that sense of threat from somebody else coming into the picture. And then the self-care piece is kind of feeling like you're in a good place individually in terms of just having slept enough, feeling like you're doing well in your life. Like oftentimes people told me, like, I can't feel compersion if I haven't had a good meal and if I feel really burnt out at work. So you have to feel resourced. Like you have to come from a place of abundance in order to feel that you can mm-hmm. be generous and mm-hmm. you have something else to give. And your partner can, you know, direct resources, emotional and practical resources towards somebody else. So that's at the end of
my friend John Webster. Sorry. John Webster, he used to teach on the East Coast about non-monogamy. And he always said, it was like the simplest phrase that really stuck with me, which is that when everything is going well, it's easy to share.
Mm-hmm.
Which mm-hmm. speaks to that deficit versus abundance. When you feel like you are on track, you're in the flow of life, things are going well, it is very, very easy to feel empathetic joy for other people, right? And when you feel like you're not where you want to be or your relationships aren't where you want them to be, then it's harder, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So compersion is very much like a contextual phenomenon. That's another thing to kind of loop back to what we were talking about earlier. Like we can't feel like we shouldn't feel ashamed if we don't feel a compersion, because oftentimes it depends on a whole bunch of contextual factors.
Right. Okay. So let's talk about the relational piece.
Right.
Because you said individual, so, relational.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So relational is huge. Like, of course, the more safety and security there is between two people, the easier it is going to be to feel compersion. So obstacles to that are lack of trust, lack of security, lack of communication. So if there is a breach in the connection between two people, it's going to be harder to have compersion. So that's one of those kind of sub-themes that came up. Another one is feeling like there's not enough integration with the metamors, with your partner's partner. Like if you don't like the person that your partner is dating, it's going to be harder to feel compersion for them. If you don't trust them, if you feel like, oh, this person is trying to take away my partner, or they don't respect me, or they're a threat somehow to my relationship satisfaction, to our lives, then it's going to be a big thing that's in the way. If I feel like otherwise it's like subtracting from our relationship satisfaction instead of adding to it. Because, you know, even though we talk about compersion being like not just directly related to like benefits received from the partner's other relationship, it's still part of it. Like if you feel like your partner is happier and growing in ways that they wouldn't grow with you, and it's not a threat, then that's part of compersion, like that kind of gratitude for, ooh, like I'm getting something out of this. But if you're not getting anything out of it, then you're actually feeling like you're giving something up. That's an obstacle.
Hmm. I mean, how do you deal with just like their personalities? Because I've definitely heard people say to me, I respect and generously tolerate that relationship, but I do not like that person. And it's not that I see them as a threat. I don't think they're an unsafe person. It's not like a red flag situation. It's just like, ooh, I just don't, that's not the person I would pick. I don't like that person.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's just like, okay. Like if you don't feel like there is a threat, if it's not a red flag situation, then you can still feel compersion for your partner being happy with that person without having to all hang out together, without having to feel like there's like this huge feedback loop between the three of you. Like it might be great to be in a situation where everyone just really likes each other, that can promote more compersion, but it's not necessary. It's just life. It's just like you can't love everyone.
Yeah. Let's talk about the social barriers.
Yeah, social barriers are when you are in a social environment that is just, again, like mononormative. I mean, which we all are. We are all in a bigger, kind of wider social environment that's mononormative. But, you know, if you're not being supported by anybody else outside of your small relationship, if you're not involved with more community, it can be an obstacle. And that is that came up especially with BIPOC people, you know, of Black, Indigenous, and people of color descent. Like, there's less available polyamorous communities where they can really see themselves reflected. So I didn't have a ton of participants that were BIPOC, but those I had like told me like, yeah, like it's hard in my situation because I don't really feel comfortable going to all those poly potlucks where I am the only person of color there. So that can be an obstacle to feeling this kind of inclusive community, which in turn validates somebody's identity and promotes compersion.
Yeah. And again, this is like a modeling situation, right? If you can see it, if you can see yourself reflected and then you can see other people doing it, it also helps you kind of imagine it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
When you did your research, was there anything that surprised you? That or that you had assumptions about maybe going into, and then people told you something different?
Yeah, probably the biggest piece that felt very, you know, kind of, I mean, surprising and really important was that compersion and jealousy can and really do oftentimes coexist within the same moment, within the same relationship. And that is so counterintuitive. Like, we don't think about those things as being possible in the same package, but it is. It's definitely one of those coexisting emotions. And until you understand that, it's harder to understand compersion. I would say that was the biggest surprise.
It's really the dialectical.
Surprise. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's really the dialectical, yeah. Right? It's the both and piece of it that I think. Mm-hmm. This provides a sort of more expansive, less intimidating view of it, right? This, just in the way that you're framing it, feels more accessible. Compersion feels more accessible in the way that you describe it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also, like, to know that you can feel something in your gut, like you can be in that, like, like feeling jealous in an embodied sense, but still work with your mindset, work with your values, and have the behavior that you want to have. Like, I interviewed a man who was 83 years old, and he told me about his kind of breakthrough experience of feeling jealousy and deciding, like, I don't want to act on my jealousy anymore. Like, he had this jealousy crisis with a woman, like, it was 30 years prior or something, and he said, like, oh my gosh, I acted like such an asshole about it. And I realized in that moment that I didn't want that to be me. I didn't want to feel this entitlement around my jealousy. So I went and did all the work that I needed to do around self-love and communication and all of that so that I wouldn't be that person anymore. So that was so touching because it talks to the power of a mental decision first, like, okay, like, I'm deciding to have those values. I'm deciding I don't want to treat people as possessions. I want to give that kind of freedom to my lovers. And then I can work with my own nervous system and my own relationship with myself to try to get the emotions and the sensations to catch up to this ideal. But in the meantime, I'm going to really monitor my behavior so that I don't restrict my partner's freedom just because I feel like I'm in pain, you know? Like, it felt very, very powerful to hear someone talk so clearly about their relationship with their jealousy and deciding, like, I'm not going to be a slave of this, and I'm going to choose a different path. And, you know, 30 years later, you know, he really did not experience much jealousy anymore. Like, he's this 83-year-old, like, really happy, has long-time wife and lovers and living his best life.
Well, I also, what I love about that story is that you can validate the feeling, right? You can be like, okay, mm-hmm. I'm having all these crazy thoughts, or I feel it in my body, or some combination. You can validate the feeling. The feeling is real. But you can say to yourself, I don't need to say something in response to this feeling out loud. I don't need to do something in response to this feeling, right? To be less kind of reactive. But I think that's uncomfortable for people, right? Like, sit with the bad feeling, like, make friends with it, you know, that kind of idea.
Enjoy your dark night of the soul.
Right. Yeah. Enjoy your Netflix and chill with jealousy, because that's what you're doing for the next 4 hours. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It is very powerful, that concept. I mean, in our Western culture, we don't really like to sit with pain. We don't like uncomfortable emotions. We have this ideal that we should just be happy, happy, happy. But I mean, there's so many gifts from being able to sit with those uncomfortable emotions and analyze them and question them and validate them and just really be intimate with them. Because as long as we don't really look at them in the face, we can be slaves of them. We don't really realize, and it can come out in all kinds of passive-aggressive behaviors. But when we really look at, I mean, that's why polyamory can be a spiritual path for some people, like, to really look at, where is my jealousy coming from? I mean, that's such an investigation. That's so deep to really look at it and to not give up. On, like, to not just throw your hands up and say, like, oh, it's too big, it's too powerful, I just need to be monogamous because I don't want to feel these things.
Okay, we're going to take another commercial break. Oh, there's so much more to talk about, and we're going to run out of time, and I just know it, but I've got to accept that. I'm going to go for some radical acceptance on that. I am. Okay, so stay with us. More with Marie when we get back. Hey, everyone. Have you ever said no to receiving oral sex when you wanted to say yes? Something in the back of your mind, maybe, holding you back? There's so many reasons why this could happen. Maybe you feel oral sex is too intense and you want a little buffer. Maybe you have your period and still want an enthusiastic mouth between your legs. Maybe you just don't want skin-to-skin contact. Finally, there is a truly innovative product to address all these things. It's called Laurels. Think orals, but with an L. They're single-use natural latex undies that are so ultra-thin you can feel every little thing. Plus, the super stretchy latex is easy on your partner's tongue and allows for tongue and finger penetration, even simultaneously. Listen, I believe in all the products that have ads on this show. I have to. But boy, was I over the moon when I found out this company wanted to advertise with me, and not just because it meant I got some free stuff to try out. When I heard about Laurels, one of my first thoughts was, finally. Finally, 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 we need this in the world. You know, I had a second thought, which was, is this going to be like a bikini underwear situation? Because that might not work for lovers who are masculine, trans, non-binary, or genderqueer. But guess what? They already thought of that. It comes in a bikini style and a shorties style. And dear listeners, I want you to know this fits a person up to about size 14. The owners are working on more sizes, so stay tuned. For listeners of our show, Laurels is giving 15% off your first purchase today at mylaurels.com. That's www.mylaurels.com. Use code Tristan. Again, mylaurels.com, code Tristan for 15% off. Laurels are the world's first oral sex panties, and they give you the power to love oral always. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking today with Dr. Marie Tuen, who knows a whole lot about compersion. In fact, of course, there's a whole website. One of her websites is called whatiscompersion.com, and you can read all about her research there if you're interested. So, Marie, you also have a coaching practice for folks. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm wondering, like, what are some basic tools you may pass on to people who are wanting to get to this place, you know, to sort of assist them or help them, like practical tools?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I created a worksheet that is based on my research of all the factors that do promote compersion and the obstacles that come in the way of compersion, so that people can, you know, basically like look at this worksheet and identify where am I doing great? Like, where is the love flowing? Where am I doing great? And on the other hand, like, where am I being blocked? What are the things that are coming in the way of me experiencing more compersion? So once we have those factors identified, then we can target strategies and techniques and tools to look at those factors specifically. Like, for example, if you are really secure within yourself, you have a great relationship with your partner and your metamors, but you're not really surrounded by community, then we can look at, okay, like let's look at different community engagement options. And, you know, if it's you not feeling secure within yourself, then we can look at what would it take for you to build that sense of security within yourself and secure attachment inside. And then if it's a relational issue, then how do we work on the relationship? How do we work on the communication, the trust, et cetera, et cetera? So it's not just like a blanket approach. It's really targeted to each individual because everyone is super different. Everyone has a different path and different obstacles in the way.
Okay, first, I love me a worksheet. Anyone who knows me and has read my books knows I love organization and I love like concrete things. This is one of the reason I love The Jealousy Workbook by Kathy Labriola, because it is like there's so many good worksheets in there that just that really help you reflect, help you think about things, right? Give you these prompts to think about what your values are and what you want. And so I love me a worksheet. Like the answer is a worksheet and I'm in love with that. But you know, because I think people need these practical real world things. So what would you say is a common challenge that the people you work with are, besides like trying to achieve or get somewhere in the spectrum and the path of compersion, what else do you feel like comes up a lot for people?
So I would say that issues generally can be categorized in one of two things. It's either meaning-making or the sense of threat. So some people just, you know, need more context at the level of mindset and ideology, like people who are struggling, maybe coming from a monogamous background, and they're like, oh my gosh, like I don't even know if this feels right for me to be in a polyamorous or non-monogamous relationship. And then we're like working on meaning. And then there's another category of people who are more at the level of like, okay, I know I want this, but I'm freaking out. What do I do with my nervous system? What do I do when I don't feel safe? What do I do when I have these kind of trauma responses? And that is a whole different ballgame. And, you know, of course, there is everything in between, but I would say, yeah, like I would say it's about half and half. I would say for about half the people, it's more the meaning making. And for half the people, it's more about building this sense of security, either within themselves or with their partners. And I often also see like just kind of a lack of really embracing the relationship with metamors. Like there is this sense also that comes from mononormativity that this person is bad because they're with my partner, like this underlying sense of threat. So oftentimes connection really dissolves the edge of jealousy. even in normal, like non-intimate life situations. Like if I'm jealous of someone who I think is more successful than me for some reason, I know the remedy to that is to look closer at that person and look at all of who they are. Like they might appear more successful on the surface, but if I really dig and maybe even like meet them or look further, the more connected I feel with that person, the less jealous I feel. So to build just bridges between people and understanding of people so that it's not this like obscure or abstract threat over there, but it's actually a real person we're talking about and feeling things around. So reducing the separation is really good.
Mm-hmm. I call that my book like a reality check, which is like sit across the table from the person. Because in your mind, they're the biggest, brightest, best thing that's ever existed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're getting that feedback too, because the person's an NRE. So they are the best, brightest. But if you sit across from them, you're like, oh, wait, like they also forgot to pick up their dry cleaning and they were 10 minutes late because they didn't park. Like, and there is a sense of sort of shared humanness, I think, when you meet someone, that they're no longer kind of mythical and one-dimensional. You're like, oh, wait, this is a real person. And so if I have flaws, they have flaws. And if I have spots I need to work on, they have spots that they need to work on, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Yeah. I mean, understanding really breeds compassion. And compassion then breeds empathy, which is foundational to compersion. So the closer you can get to that empathy and feeling like, like I understand this person at a more personal level, then the less of a block there will be and the more safety there can be as well.
Okay, so let's talk about a bigger, broader issue, which, because you brought up empathy, which is a lot of people believe we do not live in an empathetic society. That we are short on empathy. And I feel like that plays out in a number of ways. In people focusing on their own individual needs and wants and gains over the collective health of community. This played out in COVID in so many ways, which is I don't want to wear a mask, which to me was I don't want to take care of other people, or I don't, I don't care about other people because I want to do what I want to do.
Right.
I don't want to be a citizen in this world. I want to be my siloed sort of self. And then of course we've seen a level of, we've become more aware of the level of violence against certain people in our culture, which, I mean, from the sort of police killings of Black and Brown folks to the anti-trans legislation that's now sort of like sweeping all these different states, there's a real sense that some people don't consider other people humans on their level. There's like a sense of real inhumanity.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that in the world?
Whoa, that's a big question. Indeed. I mean, yes, of course there's a lack of empathy in the world. Otherwise, we wouldn't have so much violence. We wouldn't have wars. I mean, we would be an amazing race if we had a lot of empathy. But we also do have a lot of empathy on the other hand. Like when you think about what it takes to perpetuate the human race, you know, like we need love, we need to care for babies, we need to be empathetic with those children we have in order for the race to survive. So we have it in us. It's definitely built in. But what comes in the way of that empathy oftentimes is a struggle for resources. It's that kind of territoriality and that sense of my tribe against your tribe. And we build all of these walls between us and that sense of separation. So I think it's really cool to look at the macrocosm of, you know, like how we are a species that has a capacity for empathy, yet we build all of those walls and that separation. And then look at the microcosm where we're doing the same thing with monogamy as the default, and like, okay, like this is my little nuclear family and everyone else is an outsider. Like we have this sense of a family that is very, very small. Doesn't include many people. It just includes our little tribe and maybe like our neighborhood or our town or people who look like us. And can we expand the circle of who we consider family bigger? Like both at the macro level, like, okay, like why wouldn't I care about someone who lives in Japan or in Africa as much as I care about my neighbor? And at the micro level, like why wouldn't I care about my metamor? You know, like loving my partner in a way that I also love them, and why would they be excluded? Like, how can I find that sense of empathy and family and familiarity with people who are not in my immediate circle? And what's the block? Like, can we use like a magnifier glass or a flashlight to determine like, where is it that I block the flow of my love? And can that be a path? Can we remove those walls at the micro level? I think it's possible. Mm-hmm. I think it's in our power.
Well, you said we have it in us, which I really appreciate. It's a really hopeful mm-hmm. statement that we have it in
I'm
us.
I'm an optimist.
And yeah. Good. It's good to be. Listen, there's nothing wrong with an optimist. I'm like, you know, an introvert, extrovert, and I'm like an optimist, cynic. Like I'm uh-huh. I'm both. Always both. So no, but I like the notion that also that we can, if we begin on the micro level, right? If we begin to cultivate more empathy in our lives and in our circles, that mm-hmm. can also sort of radiate out.
Yes. You know, and that is honestly, like, that's the big reason why I decided to study compersion. Because when I heard the term for the first time, I just, wow, like, my brain exploded. It was like, this is the paradigm that I want to live in. This is it's symbolic of this choice of, you know, like, inclusion, of including other people who we would normally not include as family, as people that we care about, people who are, you know, in our inner circle of love and intimacy, and saying like, yes, they can be here. Like, it doesn't have to be a threat. And to think how we can extrapolate that to the global scale is just, to me, it's like a seed crystal of healing. It's a really powerful concept and path. So I'm so glad you brought up that big picture level.
I know you were like, that's a big question. But sometimes I was just feeling like, you know, that you were ready to go there, and you were. So you had a lot of thoughts about it. That's a great way to end our show. We're out of time. So I want to remind people how they can find you. So there's two websites. The research on compersion is called whatiscompersion.com. Marie's coaching practice is Love Insight, and it's like having insight into something. INSIGHT-dating. Loveinsight-dating.com. And then on Instagram, she's at love_insight_dating. And on Facebook, Love Insight Dating, and also What is Compersion? Thank you so much for this conversation.
Thank you, Tristan. This was lovely.
I want to thank my editor, A-Rod, at FTC Designs. He makes the show, he pieces the show together and makes it sound good. And you can follow him on Twitter at FTC Designs. I want to remind you that new episodes go up on podcast platforms on Mondays. We always appreciate reviews on your favorite platforms because that helps people find us. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Tristan Taramino. And let's all try to have a little bit more compersion in our lives.